is a pre-recorded version of the WTKA Roundtable on WTKA, unsurprisingly, 9 o'clock Thursdays. This is recorded, though, so if you call in, nobody will answer you.
Welcome back inside the MDN studios, Sports Talk 1050, WTK, the ticket online at WTK.com. Before we get going with the MGO blog roundtable, although it's more of a straight line than a roundtable because Brian's going to be in the main chair, Craig is between Brian and myself, and then I'm in my normal seat. But announcement now just came through from Comerica Park. Today's game has been postponed. Tigers game has been postponed. It has been rescheduled for tomorrow at 1:10. So today's tickets will be used for tomorrow. And it is the first time at Comerica Park that they've actually postponed opening day in Detroit. But obviously, we're not talking baseball here on the show, but we wanted to get that announcement out there. So you will not hear Tigers baseball here on the radio. You will have our regular lineup with the Inside the Huddle, followed by the Jim Rome Show, and then the M Zone at 3. Because there is no Tigers baseball today. But as I said, it's time for the MGO blog roundtable, or as I said, it's more of a line, me, then Craig, and Brian in a straight shot here. Good morning, fellas. How are you?
How are you doing? Good. Sam has gone to San Antonio.
Sam is en route to the airport to get to San Antonio, because I hear there's something going on down there this weekend.
Yeah, my brother is too and plans to write something for MGO blog on the social side of the doc who blocked.
Right,
he's planning on writing something for you guys.
We let people write things. It's called a message board. It's
Exactly.
The greatest mistake diaries I've ever made.
Diaries. Aren't the diaries?
Yeah, the diaries. I'm joking.
Message. I know. You know, message boards are like, aren't they like Twitter, though? Just a quick aside, it's like sometimes they're great and sometimes they are horrifically bad. It's like the angel on one shoulder and the devil on the other. Like every once in a while, you get a nugget of information on a message. You're like, wow, that's great. And then other times you're like, we've walked into a cesspool. So
our message boards are
actually yours isn't that bad.
Fairly comprehensive.
Yours isn't that
talk,
bad.
They talk a little trash about you every once in a while.
They
though.
Do every
I was
once
like,
in a while.
He's a nice guy. What
every
are you
once
doing?
In a while it pops up. I'm like, well, I'm glad people are listening. I won't comment. I don't care enough to comment, but I'm glad people are listening.
Yeah, I apologize for those people.
Hey, it happens. It happens on Sam's site too. I'm sure. Actually, no, it doesn't happen on the other site because if you mention the letters WTK, I think they get blocked out on that site. I think yours do too. Actually, I don't think MGO blogs will be mentioned on that other site either. So.
Oh well.
Sorry, yeah. Right. They're lost, not ours. So, guys, happy? I mean, you must be in pretty good mood, right, Brian?
I am in a good mood. I don't know how you could tell.
Well, the smile kind of gives it away.
I have to give Brian credit. I mean, he just nailed the Texas A&M game last week. I mean, Ed and Sam, and I think you are, had Michigan winning. I've been the Charles Barkley of WTKA.
Needless to say, Craig, so the amount of messages we got, we got so many messages about Craig Ross on Friday here on the station, it was unbelievable.
I got them in my email.
People are tweeting me, it's like, hey, could you do something mean to Craig Ross? I'm like, no, he's nice.
And that's
my
the
friend.
Thing. We're like, because Craig doesn't have, he has email, but we don't give it out. Doesn't have Twitter.
Right.
We're his intermediaries. Either
right,
go
yeah.
to MGO blog or come to us.
We have no idea
how much people, like, trash people are talking about you because you don't have Twitter.
Yeah, that's a good thing, I suppose.
It's not. Because
we get all of it. So
As long as it's just my terrible pick last week, and
we'll get to the generic, the specific basketball conversation in a moment. But
sure.
Guys, Brian and Craig, we actually recently talked about one of those great Michigan weekends. It was like about a month or so ago. This hopped it. I mean, this was as good a weekend as we've had in a really long time to have teams go to Final Four, Frozen Four, and you can throw in other things like Bev's team winning her fifth in a row and 24th overall and baseball winning a lot. I mean, you could throw in other things, but the way the hockey won, the way the basketball team won, it was an unbelievable weekend. It's maybe top five of our lifetime kind of sports weekends for Michigan fans.
Yeah, I was exhausted by the end of it, though.
I bet you were. I was.
I guess it's the third period of that hockey game, and they tie it up, and I was like, I've already done 12 hours of this weekend. I can't. If the A&M game had actually been close, it would have been much worse. But like, thankfully, they just kind of blew the doors off in that one. So that was. But even then, they cut it to 19, and I'm like, oh no, there's 6 minutes left.
You're just like me. It's because I had the same thought. because I've seen so many things. Like, I am a Maryland alum, so I remember the Gone in 64 Seconds game like it was yesterday back in 2001 when they had a 10-point lead with a minute to go to Duke. So, and I saw Virginia, and was it Louisville lost that game to Virginia? Yeah. It was a 4-point game with like 2-point-something seconds to go.
It was 0.9.
It was 0.9 when he actually went to the line. 0.9, yeah, 0.9 in a 4-point game. So, yeah, until I see, like, all zeros on the clock or maybe Leonard Hamilton letting his team not foul at the end, that's when I get a lot more confidence. So, no. So, all right, let's start with the basketball. We'll start with the Texas A&M when you had mentioned it a little bit, how we did have some guys on the show on Thursday maybe not so confident in that game.
It was just Craig.
Ed wasn't super confident.
No, Ed picked
Michigan, but his numbers weren't super confident.
Right. I mean, Brian actually said it was going to be an easy win for Michigan, and he was
I think I had a caveat there where it was like, if they actually shot well. And they, for the one time in this tournament, they did.
Yeah, it's the first time and only time so far.
But, you know, if you show me two traditional bigs, I'm like, I'm not worried about that against Michigan, because that's what John Beilein's whole career has been like, this is what I can't deal with by trying to match, so let's go beat it. And the rest of basketball is following him. So if you show me two guys who can't shoot at all on the floor at the same time, I'm like, we're going to win that game.
You know, one of the things that was interesting to me about that one is we didn't double down on the post at all. We played them straight up, and I thought they might double on the post, but Michigan didn't, and it worked fine. Plus, we scored almost 1.4 points per possession, which is just, you know, off the charts phenomenal. You can't lose a game, I don't think, scoring at that level. And so it really was a tremendous effort in that respect. I thought our post guys did a great job.
And we talked about their zone, how that might be a problem that crops up. And they played it intermittently in the first half, and it just didn't matter. Michigan was scorching the nets against zone or not. And I thought the quality of looks that Michigan was getting against the zone were slightly worse, but they hit all of them. So
they were a little lucky. They had the one roll, but
yeah, they had a friendly roll from Duncan.
Yeah.
And then Michigan has taken all those free throw line jumpers that are wide open, but nobody practices those shots anymore. And it kind of shows. Like, you know, Matthews hit a couple, maybe one, and I think Wagner hit one too. But in general, if someone's turning around at the free throw line for a jumper, I'm not feeling super great. But,
plus, that's not a great free throw shooting team as well. So
I wonder about, is this going to be a coming trend, do you think,
more
in basketball?
Two-three.
More 2-3? I mean, Duke played it, and they just gave up the 13- to 14-foot shot in the lane. And, I, you know, when I was playing routinely, I would hit that shot 75% of the time.
I think you might be exaggerating.
No, I'm not. And there are guys, a guy like Dave Clark in town or Bill Stapleton, they'd hit that shot 90% of the time. And so I wonder, you're right, maybe just no one ever practices that shot. Whereas when, you know, we were little, that was a shot you were always trying to get.
Well, it's interesting because Trey Burke is now with the Knicks. And with the Knicks, he's turned into this, like, mid-range assassin. He's, like,
the
best guy.
Yeah, he had 42 the other night, right?
Yeah, he's the best guy in the league right now at shooting in the mid-range.
Yeah.
And maybe that's sustainable, maybe it's not. I mean, defenses have adapted to let that go even in the NBA. So if it's there, it's there. We'll see. I mean, we're probably going to see Michigan State play some 2-3 next year just because –
Izzo probably think it's
the most effective thing in the universe right now.
Except that, well, if Jaren Jackson does come back, they actually would have a little bit of length to play with.
Is that really going
to
happen?
It's definitely I have talked to some people up there, and it's definitely a possible. I was given 80-20 when he's coming back. Now, I'm not sure. I wouldn't leave. I don't know I'm not in a strong enough position to really know.
Right.
But people that I know think that it could be as good as 80-20 that he's coming back. So that's another conversation.
Well, Ben Carter's gone, so he has the opportunity to get started.
He'll get his PT back.
That's right.
Ben Carter's not there.
That's too much.
I would assume that at some point against 2-3 zones, just like Beilein explained, I've read so many articles this week. I don't remember where I was reading this one about Beilein and him using the 1-3-1 and what they were like beforehand. And you remember the 1-3-1, not here as much as the 1-3-1 at West Virginia. Yeah. It was really good, but he even said teams catch up with it. They figure out how to beat it. And, you know, with the point guard running the baseline, teams were finding a way to get a mismatch with a big matched up against that guy at the end of the play. And so eventually they found a way to beat it. I'm assuming at some point, you'd assume that at some point someone would figure out how to practice really well against a 2-3 if more and more teams play it. But this year, I think, is the most we've ever seen. Syracuse has always done it, but Duke adding it, and Northwestern playing it a lot more, and some other teams. But we've seen more zone this year, I think, than we've had in a while. And maybe it's because it's easier to play, not just easier to be successful with, but easier to play and coach it up. I'm not sure the answer. I hope we don't see that much more of it. I don't like offense around it. I know teams can score over it and around it if you're smart with the basketball, but I don't necessarily like offenses around it because it seems to slow the games down that much more.
Yeah, I mean, it's an ugly thing to go up against, I think. Even the Syracuse game that Michigan had in the Final Four,
it was not super pretty.
We struggled against.
Not pretty. I mean, I remember Spike Albrecht hitting some way downtown shots in that game.
Well, they talked about that. I remember that year that was a strategy. They did the broomstick thing in practice, and they said extra, you know, you're going to take
your strategy is 30-footers, it's not.
They said they're going to you will extend your jump shots a little bit more. So, but Michigan wins the game against Texas A&M, and that moves us from Thursday to Saturday, and a game against Florida State. And that game was a lot different, obviously, as things reverted back offensively anyway for the most part of the way Michigan has looked. But I think one thing that we've noticed in this tournament run, but more so even this one, maybe you could throw in the Iowa game in the Big Ten tournament. In the past, when Michigan didn't shoot well, they'd lose by, 10 points, you know, season's over kind of thing. Now when they don't shoot well, they still can – it may be a closer game, but they still have a pretty good chance to win because of how good that defense is, and that's what happened on Saturday.
Yeah, and that entire second half with Michigan threatening to break the game open and not hitting the right three until, 2 minutes left, you know, I think Duncan hits
a corner three, and
then
that pushes
up 10.
Up to 10.
And then it's desperation time for Florida State. And to do that, to constantly, be on the verge of, okay, we need to hit the three to go up 10 points and close this game out, when you're 4-for-22 over the course of the game is, that's remarkable.
Yeah, it was a wonderful defensive game. Offensively, we weren't very good, but I think your blog or one of your writings said that I'm pretty sure Florida State did not hit a fast break basket in this game.
No, they did not.
And I also think they might have only scored 2 points in transition, which were off free throws, off the blown goaltend call near the end of the game.
Oh yeah,
and the guy was a blown goaltend. The guy comes down. They call a block on Mo, which was sketchy. Close.
Yes, I was pretty upset about that.
Yeah,
sequence.
That was a terrible, terrible sequence in the end of the game when the officials, who I thought had called a pretty good game, I thought Kimball McCall and Gaffney did okay until the last 5 minutes of the game, and then it became a clown show of officiating. But the impressive things to me were that they got nothing in transition at all, which is remarkable for a team that big who's going to block shots and get the ball off the board. And the other thing was also something that you pointed out, I think, in the blog or someone on your blog, that is that coming into this year, Michigan was something like 12-84 in Beeline teams.
Oh, that was Zach Shaw.
Okay,
will be on next, I imagine.
Yeah, it was, I think, 12-84.
Actually, he's on a plane with Sam.
Okay. Oh, is he?
12-84 when they're under 1 point per possession. We were 0.91 in this game.
Yeah.
And
we won 7-3
this year, which is quite...
Which is insane.
Yeah, it's quite a mind-blowing stat. Yeah. And so it just shows how good a defensive team... Michigan is, really. I can't recall a Michigan team that was really this good on defense.
Yeah, and their front court is Duncan and Wagner. Anthony Davis. I mean, they've put in the work, but they have some physical limitations, and they're still this good without a real rim presence, a shot alterer.
So you're a big believer and give Luke Jaklich a lot of praise and a lot of credit for what he's been able to help accomplish with this team.
Well, yeah. I mean, Shaw had another – I think this is actually Sam. Sam had an article about, the process of the hire.
Yeah, we had Mueller on the show yesterday.
And Donlin leaves after 1 year, and that feels not great.
Right.
It's like, okay, we just got this guy in. We had a big defensive uptick in the second half of the year when his stuff finally started kicking in. And now we're starting over from square one, and it turns out we weren't, because Beeline made a great hire for a guy he had no knowledge of. This isn't a crony hire at all. It's just, kind of the equivalent of going out and finding Don Brown, where it's like, this is just the best guy in the business, and except he didn't have Don Brown's track record. Well, you could look at Don Brown's career over a past decade and be like, I need to hire this guy. Jaklich had a really excellent impact on Illinois State, but it's still I don't know, that could be one of number of different things.
Yeah, he might have landed with a bunch of guys who could right, D yeah. up. You yeah. don't know.
You're not going to get a lot of coaches to make that move. You're gonna, is no. gonna that blindly about a guy, and you know, obviously.
Well, the thing is, it wasn't blind.
Well,
because he
very limited information in the beginning of the process. He didn't really know who he was, and then obviously Mueller had reached out, and ends up you take two guys from the same program, although Haynes had only been there for about an hour by the, when he left to come to Ann Arbor. But I love that story because Yaklich didn't want to take the job at Illinois State. His wife's like, no, you take the job. And just a few years later, he is the coach here at Ann Arbor on a team in the Final Four. And he was content to be a high school teacher and basketball coach. And he has some amazing philosophies and things that open up my eyes. I never really thought about it in the context of in John Beilein's mindset, when Michigan's on the offensive end and when the shot goes up, they're still looking at the offensive side of things and thinking about what went right, what went wrong. And he's not calling out defenses, and he's worried about still what happened on the offensive end. And Michigan's now going back on defense, and they're not quite ready because they haven't had anything told to them as far as players are concerned. And you have a guy that he just says, all right, as soon as that ball goes up, you take care of getting that defense ready. And I don't think that it even comes down to that anymore. They just sprint back. I mean, those guys get back. You mentioned off of block shots, they're getting back in transition. So not even that they're not sending guys to the glass, which they still don't actually do, but they get back. They find a way to stop fast breaks better than almost any team I've seen in a long time.
Well, they have the best transition defense in the country. They're second in points per possession, and they all give up far fewer attempts in transition. So like 11% of opponent shots are in transition, and it's almost worse than their half-court defense, which is mind-blowing. And that's one of the reasons that I thought we'd be good against Florida State. And we weren't good against Florida State, but because of that dominance in transition, Michigan had 12 of their own transition points. You know, they managed to overcome the fact that they couldn't hit the broad side of the barn from three.
Yeah, I still can't believe we're having this conversation about a Michigan team.
Well, yeah. I mean, a lot of it has to, credit has to be given to Yaklich, of course, and Beilein and the rest of the coaching staff. But I also think there's a certain level of synergy when you have guys who just have a lot of pride and desire in playing defense, which isn't ordinary. And you got a guy, Simpson. There's only one person you can put in the same category with Simpson in Michigan's history, and that's Gary Grant. And that's it. That's the list of point guards who play defense at that level. And so you've got Simpson, you've got Teske, who's an elite defender, you've got Charles Matthews, who's a very fine defender. And so that builds a certain level of synergy. So yeah, it's Yaklich, but Yaklich has also been blessed with three very unusual guys, and I think it's spun off, you know, into the rest of the team where there's a level of and defense is, you know, a lot of it is desire and playing hard.
Yeah, he walked into Matthews, who isn't the athlete that Michigan doesn't get for various reasons.
Don't forget Rockmon too. Obviously,
Rockmon's a good defender.
Rockmon has improved such a great deal. He like a couple of years ago he was a bit of a turnstile, and now he's on par with the rest of the guys. I don't think he's an elite defender, but you know when Beilein's going out and he's like, all right, and I don't know what's going on with Cassius Winston. I'm going to get this guy from Ohio who can't shoot. Who's like 5'10" tops, and I'm like, what is he doing? And now it's like, okay, I guess I understand, but I don't know if he knew that's what he was doing. I think it worked out, but he's an unusual Beilein point guard, I think we can say.
Well, he is unusual. You know, the story back then was, I wish Sam was here for this, but I think State was down to Winston and Simpson, and Simpson was sort of their backup plan. And I think Simpson's dad sort of got frustrated with that and actually came to Michigan. And then Michigan began looking at him. Simpson was not someone who Michigan was recruiting.
Well, as I recall it, he was expected to be at Wisconsin.
Okay.
And then he just kind of visited Michigan one weekend, and that was it.
Whatever it was a phenomenal choice.
I don't think he initially fits at Wisconsin either, but
fits better whoever they have right now.
Right.
Well, that's very true. That's very true. So Michigan gets the wins. I've got to ask at the end of the game, I still think that Leonard Hamilton's players confused his message. I don't care that much anymore, but they didn't foul in the last 9-10 seconds. I think that at some point in time in the last minute, he told his team, not in the last 10 seconds, but earlier than that, foul, but don't foul Robinson.
Right.
Yeah.
And then when Robinson ended up with the ball in his hands, because they first went to go foul and then they backed off. It was what it looked like. In that moment, you have to foul anybody. It doesn't really matter because there's only 10 seconds left. But I think that they got the message of don't foul Robinson stuck in their head, because if it's Simpson touches the ball, if Matthews touches the ball, you're going to foul.
Also, the guy who was closest to Robinson had four fouls. So he's kind of probably like, oh, I can't do this. I need to pass this off. This, I think it happens more frequently in games than you'd think. It just doesn't happen with 10 seconds left. So the Duke-Kansas game, in overtime, Kansas is up five. And there's 20 seconds left. They have the ball, and Duke screws it up. And they let 10 seconds run off the clock, and then they foul with, like, 9 seconds left. So
that's a bigger mistake than what happened in this game.
It is.
Because the odds of them fouling
Duncan,
having Duncan fan on two shots, and then somehow scoring 4 or 5 points in the last 9 seconds is about the odds of the moon exploding tonight. So it wasn't happening.
It was
anyway.
A mistake, but they had no timeouts for the last 2 or 3 minutes. I kind of understand how it happened. I think it gets way too much attention because it's,
And the interview that Dana did, and I think Dana was fine, and Leonard's was a little obnoxious, but even apologized after, which he didn't have to, but I think that also helped continue the conversation. It did make me calm down, though, because that last 10 seconds when they backed off, I was like, we could actually start, take a breath and relax and start celebrating that the team's going to the Final Four.
I think all basketball games should end like that instead of,
or so we can hope.
Desperate fouling.
Yeah, this was a phenomenal game and defensively. And, I went back when I watched the tape, and it was hard to find a Florida State shot that wasn't really contested. I mean,
ESPN said that there were three.
That's what I said, two or maybe three the entire game. And two of them were on scrambles when it was a loose ball and Michigan was struggling or trying to get the ball, and the ball ended up getting kicked out for an open look. I mean, that's something that I can't ever recall ever watching any basketball game. Two or three open looks in a entire game, it's just beyond comprehension. But fortunately, we needed it, because we couldn't score at all. I mean, we couldn't make a shot. And Florida State is a good defensive team. That's they're really tall. But still, we also had a lot of open looks that we just didn't make.
What would you say if I told you Ike Obiagu only played 7 minutes?
Is that right?
Yeah, it feels like he played the whole freaking game, but it was only out there for 7 minutes.
Yeah, that guy is a... He's something. So, they could have a pretty good team next year, especially if they can come up with a little bit of help in the backcourt.
Yeah,
because I think most of that team is back.
One of their point guards just pieced out. So.
Oh, okay.
C.J. Walker.
Yeah, so I was impressed with Florida State. I'm impressed with Leonard Hamilton, who somebody said, I kept looking at Leonard Hamilton saying, where have I seen this guy before?
He's Bunny Colvin from The Wire.
Yeah, from The Wire, right. And then
Providence's coach is Bunk Moreland.
It's a good thing.
Two of my all-time favorite characters.
Yeah, thankfully, The Wire is spreading throughout through college basketball. So we put the regionals behind us, and Michigan advances to the Final Four. We will talk Final Four on the other side of the break. We'll get to the Frozen Four coming up next, as well as we continue here in the Michigan Insider Sports Talk 1050 WTK, the ticket. Okay, we continue with the MGoBlog Roundtable. Brian Cook is here. Ed is not here. Sam is not here. Craig Ross is here. And, guys, we're going to now talk about Loyola, and we are not talking about it in the context of Sister Jean. We're actually going to talk about basketball, amazingly enough. So, Brian, why don't you start going through your thoughts on the matchup Michigan-Loyola Saturday at 6:09?
So, to me, they're sort of an MVC Purdue. So they have a big guy in the middle who's not much of a stretch threat, might struggle to handle the pick and roll, and they surrounded him with a bunch of shooters. And everybody on their team can shoot at least 39% from three, except Cameron Cartwig, the post. And they drive and kick a lot. They're not just looking for threes, though. They actually shoot really well from two and look for those shots. So only a couple guys on our team are really three heavy, but everybody can shoot it. The most mid-major thing about them is what happens when Cartwig goes to the bench. He's a 6'9 freshman who's 260 pounds and doesn't have the endurance to go more than 20 minutes a game. And when he goes to the bench, a 6'5 guy named Andre Jackson comes on the court. And
let me guess, he's not 6'5, 270.
He's 6'5, 230. He's got
some
bulk.
So he's beefy, but he's short.
Yeah.
Super short.
He is he plays like a traditional five. Like most of his looks are post-ups and cuts. He has a little bit of range, but really, you know, the matchup problem is a problem for Loyola in this one, not for Michigan. So when Krutwig's out there, they're definitely going to test him on those pick and rolls and see what Wagner can do against him. If they try to switch, I don't think Krutwig is going to be able to stay in front of Xavier or Marr or anybody really. And when he's on the bench, you know, that's an opportunity for Michigan to go to the rim without having anyone who's a shot blocker.
Yeah, there's been a lot of noise on the internet about Michigan going small when they play five.
Yeah, they shouldn't
five.
Do that.
And I think that's a mistake.
Yeah.
I mean, you agree with that?
Yeah. Just play your game. Loyola might have a small post, but he's a small post. That's
right.
That's what they...
Yeah, and I think we should take advantage of the five inch height advantage we would have, or more, 7-8 inch height advantage with Teske if they go small. And I'm skeptical that they can actually switch on the screens because Krutwig he's
beefy.
He's not that quick. And I just don't see him. I see that as a complete mismatch off a switch. And there was also some noise that, well, they have four guys, 6'1 to 6'6, and maybe they can just switch off screens. Well, but Michigan's going to ball pick off the
right,
off
like,
the center, not off their 6'4 guy.
There was a Yahoo Sports article about like coaches talking about the Final
Four. Anonymous
And the guy's like, well, you know, Loyola can switch 1-4. Like, who cares about switching 1-4?
Care about five.
Most teams can switch 1-4.
Yeah, it's like,
there were some really curmudgeon-y, salty things in those comments.
A lot
of us thought it was Izzo. I don't necessarily know.
It's not Izzo.
I don't think that's Izzo.
I think it's probably an assistant is what it is.
A really salty something assistant. I want to be really concerned about the game. Loyola got to the Final Four for a reason. I'm not exactly sure all those reasons, because a lot of things that people talk about with Loyola, you're like, all right, well, then how they beat the teams along their way. Now, they had some teams knocked off along their path, but they got to the Final Four and they earned their right to get there. I should be scared about a Final Four game. And like against Syracuse, we were all really nervous about that zone, right? In 2013, we were really nervous about how Michigan was going to handle that zone, what they were going to do. Now, we love John Beilein giving time to prepare for these teams, but a lot of what – there's similarities and differences, but there's a lot of things, though, that make me feel like these teams remind me of each other. Although I think Michigan's just better at everything that they do than Loyola does.
Yeah, and Michigan does have to shoot
better. They need to make shots.
They need to make shots. I do think that Michigan has an advantage because Yaklich has gone up against Loyola repeatedly, so what they do isn't going to be much of a surprise to him. And then Loyola's path through the tournament has not faced very much size. So Miami has a legitimate 6'11 post, but Nevada is all 6'7 guys,
right,
which is kind of fun. But they don't have a 7-footer on their team. Tennessee's 6'11 guy was out for the game. And then Kansas State had a post who was also out for the game. So they've been playing mostly backup posts, and then Nevada is kind of a strange – everybody's a wing kind of team.
Are we in like bizarro world? Michigan's elite on defense. Michigan's the tall team in this matchup. Like, I feel like we're in bizarro world.
That would be a good way to describe it. Yes.
It's a little bit odd.
Yeah, there's pluses and minuses. I mean, Loyola, I think, is a good defensive team. I mean, they haven't given up 70 points in 6 weeks.
They're top 20 on KenPom. So
right there. Yeah. 18 on defense on KenPom. And so they are a good defensive team. I think some of the 70-point thing is that they do play at a fairly slow pace. They're not
right, which is an advantage for them because Michigan can't shut off their transition.
And so there's that. They have won 14 games in a row. On the other hand, the competition hasn't been the best team they've probably played in the last 2 months of the season. In fact, I'm sure of it. It's probably Tennessee. And the KSU is around 40. Miami is around 40. You know, so
I went back and I watched that Tennessee game, and it didn't give me the willies about Loyola.
Okay.
Like, I felt like Tennessee was discombobulated by foul trouble for Admiral Schofield, one of the best names in the tournament,
by
the way.
Yeah, that's good.
And, of course, they were missing a post, so they played really small for a big section of the game. And they didn't run a pick and roll once.
Oh, is that right?
It blew
my
mind.
How do you play a basketball game in the modern era of any level of basketball not run at least one singular pick and roll?
Especially given the fact that, you know, Krutwig is a guy who probably
pick
struggles.
And roll off of, yeah.
So
that's an amazing stat.
I think you want to go like Rick Barnes, but, you know, Rick Barnes also made a team that was predicted 13th in the SEC, a 3 seed, so you can't do that. But it was a really bizarre game plan.
Yeah. So, I could actually get that. Rick Barnes has shown in the past to be very good from November through February. So yeah.
I mean,
doesn't necessarily surprise me completely.
I mean, Loyola's not a shot-blocking team. And even though they do shoot the ball great from three and two, I think they're about 40% from three.
They're excellent.
Almost 60 from two. They are an excellent shooting team. On the other hand, they don't really shoot a lot of threes. They're like, I think I looked it up. I think they're like number 240 in the
country.
Something
like that, yeah.
Yeah. So
which is strange because they're so good at it.
They're so good at it, but they don't really shoot a lot of them.
Well, part of it is they don't have anybody who can rise up. So almost all of their threes are assisted.
Yeah, okay.
And when they do go off the dribble, it's usually Clayton Custer, their point guard, who's an elite off-the-dribble shooter, but only from two. So he doesn't take him from three, but he'll dribble inside the line and rise up, and that's actually a really good shot for them. So, like, if he's canning all of those and, like, Simpson can't deal with it because he's trying to get up on him to prevent a three, which I think is still the play, like, that's an advantage that I think Michigan might not be able to wipe out. You know, you could see maybe, like, them have some trouble with small ball on defense. I don't think it's going to be a problem on offense, but you could see them, like, have situations where, you know, Wagner and Teske get pulled out to the three-point line, especially because their backup five is a 39% three-point shooter, although he only has 54 on the year. So it's kind of like, I don't know how much of a threat he is, even though he's good at shooting them. So, but, yeah, I feel like Michigan should be the victor in this game, and I think it should be comfortable. You know, the main thing I'm concerned about is, like, can they hit shots?
Yeah, we just start bricking it up again. No, I agree. Michigan should win the game. The other thing is, I mean, remember, Loyola did win three games by 4 points.
Yeah.
I mean, these are not like they're beating teams up. They're squeaking by at the buzzer to get where they're at.
I mean, they did have a solid win over Florida early in the year.
That's right. But they also lost. They got killed by Boise State. They lost to Indiana State at home. They lost to Bradley.
Well, the thing about those games is that good teams, if they go on the road against teams that are ranked around 100th, are going to lose some of those
sure,
games.
I agree.
And, you know, when you're in the MVC, that's the whole conference. So yeah. I looked it up on KenPom, and everybody except Loyola in the conference is ranked between like 120th and 150th, which is bonkers. So
yeah, no other league can be that close to compact.
The whole league is Minnesota, Illinois, and Rutgers. So it's not a great league, but Michigan had an overtime game against Minnesota, right? So like there are going to be situations when sometimes Isaiah Washington hits 75 long jumpers on you, and you're just like, this is what is going on.
All right, so hypothetically, they win the game. Your guys' thoughts on matchups with either Kansas or Villanova on Monday night?
Villanova terrifies me, and I don't want to play them. And I think one part of it is you see them go five out so often, and then they post up Jalen Brunson. And that might be Xavier Simpson kryptonite. I don't want to say it is, but, you know. We haven't seen it.
Right.
And he does have a big size advantage on Simpson. So, and then they just, you know, even when they're not hitting shots, it seems like they're hitting shots, which doesn't make any sense, but they're just so good from behind the line. They have a true stretch five. Like, they can really match Michigan.
And they have the best M bridges that Michigan will have faced all year.
Yeah. And then, you know, they shoot so well from three. They're kind of like a super Michigan at this point. So I would expect to lose that game, but, you know, weird things happen in basketball. I'd much rather play Kansas.
I think everybody says that.
Yeah.
They have a true seven-footer, but he has foul trouble. So he fouled out of the Duke game, and he's a guy who I think would have a bunch of monster dunks against Michigan, but I would much rather face him than Omari Spellman.
Yeah, as of week eight, I cannot pronounce his last name. I was pretty close, though. Michigan gets in the foul out of the game. I don't think he plays more than 15 or 20 minutes. I think Villanova is going to do the same thing to him, and so he won't even be on the floor.
Kansas is pretty shallow.
Correct.
So they really only go six or seven deep.
Also, Craig loves them.
Do you love Kansas?
Well, he likes short benches.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Well, I don't want to get into this today. save it for next season.
Yeah, let's never talk about that again.
I agree. Villanova is a problem. I think Jalen Brunson might be the best point guard in the country. He almost came here.
Yeah, we know.
I think he's the best college basketball player. I'm not talking about pro, and I think he's a pro too, but he's the best college basketball player in America right now.
Yeah, terrific. That isn't an overstatement. He's a terrific player. I think Nova's pretty well coached, and tough match.
DiVincenzo and Spellman, and then they have a lottery pick in addition to those guys. Yeah, like
they're good.
They're pretty good.
I mean, for us to beat I think either Kansas or Villanova, we're going to have to shoot the ball.
Yes.
And, I mean, that's what it comes down to. If we come out and shoot it like we shot against Texas A&M, we have a chance to beat.
Like, I kind of want Michigan to squeak by Loyola.
And then have their shooting game.
Right.
They seem to go two games they can't shoot, one game they can shoot. And so if Michigan comes out and is hitting threes, they can beat those teams. But, you know, they can't shoot it the way they have in most of this tournament.
No.
They might be able to get by Loyola shooting it poorly, but
I think they would be able to.
But I don't. They're not going to beat Villanova and probably not Kansas.
But you if know, they go bricking. 14-24 from behind the line, I feel fairly good about the hypothetical national.
Well, Villanova obviously would be the best team they've played all year. Kansas has got to be right in that conversation as well, especially the Big Ten wasn't great, and we know. You know, Michigan State was overrated, and Purdue healthy was a very good team, so that would probably be a close. Yeah.
Kansas is a very good team, but they're not Villanova scary. Like, Nova has one of the best offenses in the history of KenPom.
They're scary.
Kansas does not, and Kansas is highly reliant on three pointers, and Nova can be, but they're also very good inside the line. Kansas has a couple of guys whose efficiency really drops off. Their point guard Dante Graham. Tzvi Mihalik. Both those guys are really poor once you force them off the 3-point line. So that seems like something that Michigan can do, and I would much rather have that matchup. And right now, Michigan would actually be favored on KenPom against Kansas.
Is that right?
They're 7-8.
It'd be really close. But
if Kansas beats Villanova,
they would probably
flip because Loyola is 30th.
But it'd be close to a pick 'em either way.
Yes, so I'll take a pick 'em in the national championship game.
Yeah, absolutely, I will too. And of course, there's another team that's still playing that's in A4, the Frozen Four. So we can't leave out the hockey team. We'll get to Mel Pearson's team on the other side of the break. This is the Michigan Insider Sports Talk 1050 WTK The Ticket. All right, back inside the MDN studio, Sports Talk 1050 WTK The Ticket, online at WTK.com. Any further questions about Michigan playing Villanova will be answered on Monday if and when Michigan and Villanova match up in a national title game. We don't want to harp on that one anymore. But let's shift over to another part of this happy conversation that we opened up the hour with. Brian and Craig, Mel Pearson's Wolverines are going to the Frozen Four. Mel, in his first year back to Ann Arbor, has obviously exceeded all expectations, and he is playing completely with house money, and it's terrific.
Yeah, and they get a couple of teams in the tournament that they've seen a lot, and one of them they aren't so happy about having seen them so many times. But if you look at the last five games Michigan has played against Notre Dame and Ohio State, of course, they sweep Notre Dame in that last one. They have an overtime game against Ohio State in the Big Ten tournament, which they dominate 5-on-5. And then despite losing multiple goal games in Columbus in January, Michigan out-attempted Ohio State almost 2-1 in those games. So I'm like, Michigan is the least favorite of all the teams in there, according to Vegas. But I look at that draw and I'm like, okay, I can deal with this. Like, there's no super team out there. And I mean, I think Michigan has got a solid chance at winning a national title in year one. And that's
amazing.
Well, and it's also part of the format because single elimination hockey is stupid. But this year it's in Michigan's favor. So, you know, the goal against BU that put them up for good was just a total fluke. Like, Slaker's coming up the boards, he gets rubbed out, and then the defenseman tries to go D-to-D, turns that into the perfect lead pass for him, and then, you know, Slaker gets a shot off, it goes off a shin
up
and right in the net, and it's just like, all right, well, I'm glad it worked for us this year.
Well, I'll take when you get the breaks that way because they gave one away. The gate, was it the tying goal or the goal before that? The one that Tacone gave it away.
Oh, there also the wraparound goal was also like how many times do you see a wraparound?
Yeah, not many anymore. Yeah. So you see a few of those, and so you rebound. And
well, Michigan's second was also like it came off the boards, went behind the goalie.
Hockey has a lot of, you know, fluky bounces.
The whole
funny
game
things.
Was just like the hockey is unpredictable. That was the whole game.
Yeah, and it was a fun game. When the game got to 3-3, I'm sure that a lot of us had that moment of, all right, BU in Worcester. Can they find a way to scratch and claw to get to reclaim a lead? But they dominated the rest of that period for the most part. They scored three goals. Obviously, they emptied it
out. Well, I think that's...
Well, so on the scoreboard, to put up the one, then they get the second, and then to add the empty netter. On the scoreboard, the game got back in their control pretty quickly.
On the scoreboard.
Yes.
I mean,
that's all where it matters.
I mean,
in the end.
Did it feel good to you? It didn't feel great to me because Michigan was unable to cope with the BU power play and ended up just kind of throwing it up the boards for most of the second half of that game. And... I mean, they got a 2-on-1 to get the insurance marker, but, you know.
Well, it's like dominating on the scoreboard makes me comfortable because I'm looking at that number, and I'm seeing the 3-1 went the wrong way to 3-3,
yeah.
And the sinking feeling is able to turn in the opposite direction when they go 4-3, 5-3, despite how the action is. Because, Brian, how many games have you guys seen where one team is out-shooting the other team like 3-1, and they have amazing chances – and then the other team has one good chance, and they bury it, and they win 1-0. I mean, it happens. It's hockey, right?
That's kind of the thrust of my complaint about the tournament.
Didn't we at Notre Dame lose twice 2-1?
Yes.
I don't know how close those games were. It was the home and home.
Michigan plays home and home against Notre Dame, but they played one series in early January.
They lost both 2-1.
Yeah, and those were dead even games.
Okay.
And then they had a little bit of an advantage in the subsequent series. Mm-hmm. Notre Dame is very good, but they haven't been as good in the past, I'd say, month. So they're a tight checking team. They are extremely responsible defensively. They don't have a lot of high end talent. Not like BU does, anyway.
It's pretty cool the way that the Big Ten was a couple of years ago. We were all questioning if the Big Ten being a hockey conference was a mistake as everybody seemed down and it was really bad. And all of a sudden now you have one Minnesota school and three Big Ten schools in the Frozen Four in St. Paul.
Well, and you know, turns out adding a Jeff Jackson coach team to your conference is a good idea.
No, obviously that's a great idea and that helps. But it elevates, I guess, Michigan and Ohio State a little bit as far as when you look at the quality of opponents you have within the league.
The whole conference, the conference schedule is the reason Michigan made the tournament. Like before Minnesota got the worst possible last weekend ever, where they needed six different things to go wrong and they all went wrong, five of the seven teams in this conference were headed for the tournament because they had such a collectively strong non-conference schedule. So the strength of the tournament is the reason that Michigan is in the Final Four because it's the reason that they made it. Maybe less so because they had such a strong finish to the season, but it's definitely a change from a couple of years ago.
Michigan just has to stay out of the penalty box. I mean, our penalty kill's dreadful. I mean, and if we stay out of the penalty box, then we have a shot because Michigan is a competitive against most anybody 5-on-5 team.
Yes, and they're playing Ciccone and Quinn Hughes 25 to 30 minutes a game. Mm-hmm. And Quinn Hughes is the first defenseman I can remember where when he's off the ice, all I can think about is when he gets back on the ice. He's become a totally dominant force.
Was the BU game that he had the puck, like I had to skate all the way through everybody and bring it out and clear the zone
out? He does that every game.
That's true.
But he did take Jordan Greenway, who's probably a foot taller than him, off the puck. Maybe not a foot. And just came out of the zone like it was nothing. And he's
a talent.
He's supremely talented. He's flying up my list of the best defensemen I've ever seen play at Michigan.
Wow. Do you have a prediction for the do you dare make a prediction for the Frozen Four? Sam's not here to hold you to it.
It's completely pointless because it's single elimination hockey, but I feel pretty good about playing Notre Dame. I feel like Michigan played the Irish pretty well over the course of the season. Five of their six goals against Michigan are on the power play, so they've had four games. They've barely been able to score 5-on-5, and this is a tournament situation where they tend to let stuff go. So, sure, I'll put Michigan in the final.
I have to put Michigan in the final after last week. Or you'll just get more Twitter stuff.
Oh.
Yeah, we don't want
I don't have a choice. But I think it's a toss-up.
Like, it was one tweet. I might be overstating.
I had more than one. Part of this conversation next week when you guys come back. I'll be out of town. But, Sam, when you guys are back in the studio next Thursday,
yeah, that's right.
Sam will revisit because you have this gap between the Final Four.
Right. And thank you for that, by the way, because if I had to cover both Frozen and Final Four in 1 week, it would be.
I've done it. But they flipped it in like, the late 90s. They flipped it?
It was a long time ago.
It was the late 90s because in 97 I was in Milwaukee when Red's best team lost.
Well,
and when
been...
they lost, I said, heck with it. I watched Brendan Morrison win the Hobie,
yeah.
And then I met up with my family in Indianapolis for the Final Four. It was the same weekend. And so it was that year, it was the next year, the year after, it was late 90s, maybe early 2000s, when they made the flip to push it back a week, which for a little bit I didn't like because I hate this week off, but it actually is everyone has to have the week off, so it actually is a benefit. You get it separates the hockey and the basketball.
If you're in the Final Four, it's also very helpful. So
yeah, it definitely is helpful with that one. So, guys, we'll talk more about the Frozen Four next week. Hopefully, when you guys are back next week, we'll have some really fun things basketball-wise to talk about. I mean, we've had a lot of fun basketball things to talk about for the last few months anyway, but big games coming up this weekend, so we'll see how things play out, and we'll see you guys next week. As always, appreciate you guys coming in.